At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
The Women's Six Nations Show on OTB Sports.
In association with Guinness, hashtag never settle. Drink responsibly, visit drinkaware.ie.
Welcome to the Women's Six Nations Show on OTB Sports in association with Guinness. They are the proud partner of the Irish rugby team. Ireland did wrap up their Six Nations campaign last weekend with a win over Italy, and this will be our last show this week. So we made sure it's a good one with our two great guests today, Lynn Cantwell and Fiona Hayes. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Great to have to be here.
But it's great to have you on the show. And you know what? We will get into the nitty bitty grit in just a little bit, but Fiona, it was great last weekend, you know, for Ireland to finish on a high.
Yeah, that was it. I mean, they said from day one that their goal was to finish top three in the Six Nations. I think after the week that had preceded them after the France game, some of the players probably didn't feel great, a little bit down in themselves and how they performed. So a win was a must, essentially, if we were to kind of stamp our mark on that Six Nations. And I think they'll be relatively happy. Few errors in the performance from both teams. I think there was maybe 49 handling errors or errors altogether. So that was wasn't great, but just to finish on that high, they'd be absolutely delighted with themselves, and they should be. They put their hearts and souls into it for that last game.
Lynn, I mean, we all know it probably wasn't a pretty game, but to be fair, I think the win was needed.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I think like Fiona was saying there, I think they will be pleased with it. I think what set everybody off course was just that absolutely massive performance against Wales. And although I genuinely think it was reflective of a good Irish side, because we saw lots of great talent emerging with Dorothy Wall and Aidan Parsons really coming into her own, and Hannah Tyrrell played well at 10, but it was against a poor Welsh. And then it obviously fast forward to the French game, and it was a very, very, very good French side. And that probably told the story about where Ireland are relative to the teams that are pulling away. But you know, to claw that back then and within a week, and you know, the tough week, as Fiona was saying, that was in it, and they showed maturity in the game. I definitely think from a forwards point of view, they're definitely evolving, and they've tidied up their set piece. I think Lena Maloney did well at hooker, and her work from a try scoring point of view is obviously paying dividends. I think just Stacey Flood obviously came into 12, and that was a really, really good thing to see, and I'd be really hopeful for her future. I think she's a good 10, and she showed just more signs of talent. But then at that 10 position, we want to see some stability around it. So obviously lots more room to evolve, but in general, I think lots to learn from that Six Nations. Very positive.
Yeah, Fiona, I think for you yourself, when you're looking at Italy, you know, was a poor form for Italy, then considering, I suppose, could we've got more from them?
Yeah, I suppose. But when you're in the heat of the moment of the game, you're main as a player, you know, you're not kind of concentrating exactly what's going on error-wise around you. Your main focus is to get that win, and you're kind of involved in that. You're playing hard. Things were going wrong. I mean, Ciara Griffin went off early, the captain. That would have been a big hit to them. And, you know, Hannah O'Connor had to come back in there and kind of, as Lynn spoke, I thought the pack settled down really, really well. And Cliona Maloney definitely kind of stood up as a character. I saw her speaking to the girls. I saw her taking control of that. From my perspective, I was so excited looking at a scrum. I'm obsessed with it. So excited looking after the Wales game. You know, they were just on form. Their body shape, their body height, everything looked amazing. France, that obviously under pressure, went out the window. So when it came to the Italy game, I wasn't sure what type we were going to see from the pack. Now, they had about a 94 success rate. I still think they were under pressure a lot in their own scrums, but they absolutely stuck with it, and they changed the game then around that. So when they weren't doing things, the strike was coming through, they were getting the ball out quick. So I think it's that learning and that growth when you're in the heat of the moment to see players make decisions and decide what's in front of them and exactly play what's in front of them. And that's what kind of excited me. And as Lynn said, a lot to tidy up in different areas. But, you know, in that game, they wanted a win, and that's what they went out and they did that.
And I think you just touched on it, Lynn, just a few moments ago about the weak turnaround when, you know, coming from such a defeat and such a high from Wales. That must have been very hard as a player to try and get your confidence back up.
Yeah, definitely. And it's something that that I think is a really important component in creating a team, a successful team and a consistent team is a good blend of maturity and youth and inexperience coming through. So we've seen a lot, as I said, Doherty and a lot of the sevens players coming in, and although they're experienced players and experience in the 15s pitch, that's very fresh, that's very active. We see the pace of the game being really, really good, but then it's the management of the game that's impossible for younger players to have, but that's often a strength of the more experienced players. So I was disappointed, although I'm completely fine with rotating players. I thought Claire Malloy would have brought more of that stability. She's one of the oldest players. Lindsay Peat is there and she is learning her trade, don't get me wrong, and she's a very mature sports person, but still kind of learning to trade in a way from a rugby management point of view. And I think that's what I mean from a 10 position. That's what you want from a strategic thinker and how you manage the game. And we saw a couple of examples of that whereby, you know, they were trying to, they didn't guys on counter-attack opportunities. They took the ball in when there was space out wide. And just that vision to be able to identify where you should be playing, when you should be playing that, and how do you come back if you go behind, or how do you pull ahead when you go ahead, and how do you capitalise on what Italy are doing poorly. So all of those things are usually what mature players will have, and that combination is important. So that will time, but you just hope that they're focusing in on that, because that will be a key component in if they're going to push forward in this squad.
Yeah, on Monday, Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe, the newly capped Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe, was chatting to Off the Ball on Rugby on Monday, and she just said that how much they will learn from the Italy game and how important it was. Let's take a listen.
2 wins from 3 after not... This team hasn't played in 6 months, so we'll take those. But this weekend was very much about us and about how we could perform as a team. We had to wipe the slate clean after the France game, because that was over. We had to move on. It's sport. You just have to learn and get on from it. But you make sure that you learn from those lessons. So we learned from a lot of those. And then going into the Italy game, just kept the focus on us, seeing what we could do to bring in a good performance. So I think we were well able to handle that. We have a few things, obviously, that we can work on and improve on, but to be able to bounce back after that France game and focus on us was a massive achievement.
Fiona, what can they learn from the Italy game?
I suppose, as I said, there was a lot of unforced errors. So that's something they would look at. Lynn spoke about transitions. I actually had a conversation with a couple of players in camp who told me they focus so much time on that transition area and practicing on what to do when the ball is kicked back and all that. And they'd spent a lot of camps doing that. So sometimes, you know, you can focus on areas, and when you get to that pressure situation, it just doesn't happen. So I know there was a couple of situations where I was screaming and shouting at the telly for the ball to maybe go 1-2 more passes out wide. But that sometimes is that individual player not having the confidence or not having the vision. So they seem to have been working that on that in camp. And that's what we love to see, that kind of creativity. So it's now kind of working under pressure and being able to deliver that for the team every week that they're playing, you know. And I suppose when they go back to club level, being under pressure when they go to province level and then up with Ireland, we'll see a kind of, I suppose, they're highly skilled. And for me, it's what we saw was when that pressure came on, when that line speed came on from France, it was almost at times they didn't know how to handle that. And I'm sure they've practiced those situations in camp as well. I'm absolutely positive of that. But when it got to like the game time and that high intensity, it just didn't happen for them. So I think they'd have to have a look at that after the France game and maybe look at Italy game and see how they can maybe improve on that, because as we've seen from Wales, their skill set, they're improving massively. Their set piece, their offloading game has been absolutely brilliant to watch at times. You've just seen, you know, like I've watched it, and big forwards getting their hands free to get that ball away. So it's just basically, I think what they're going to need and what they're going to work on before the qualifiers would be trying to do all that under massive pressure. That's where we'd love to see them kind of explode as a team.
Lynn, you seem to be agreeing with Fiona. The head is nodding there about them being under pressure.
Yeah, look, it's a dynamic that's like very real in rugby and in all sports. But and I think the value, and that's why I just think like sport in general is just a really cool vehicle to kind of experience things in life. In that, like when you're on a pitch and when you're tired or when you're gone behind or when something's not working, you've tried a move that it just hasn't worked and why isn't the defense doing what you thought it would do? All of these things are pressure. Then it causes you to kind of to reflect and think, why is that not working? You either manage that, turn to your players and say, what's going on here when there's a break in play? Let's problem solve and let's figure it out. Or often what we see, or if you don't see that happen, and often what you see is like, let's just try it again, or let's just try it harder, or let me just go myself, you know? So there's all of these things that just what pressure generates on the pitch and what's what Fiona's saying. So that's a really good example actually of, you know, you're working really hard of it in training, but if the intensities by which that you're working on that, or just that you're as a younger player still getting used to that pressure and how you manage yourself, then that's what games are perfect for. And that's why we talk so much about the need for just game time, test rugby. And so that you can, that's the only place you can learn that stuff is just on the pitch. And as you say, they've practiced that counter-attack down transition so many times in training, but didn't put it. And the only variable that had changed there, that it was a match situation. So you want to take that away, you watch your video, talk about it, and then hopefully the next time you do it differently.
I think, go on, Fiona.
Sorry, I was just even with that fella. I remember even, you know, you're training my first few months in camp, you're training hard, for my first cap, I remember going on thinking it was against England, but I was like, oh yeah, I'm fit, I'm healthy, I'm good to go. And after about 3 minutes of test rugby, I was questioning, was I going to have a heart attack? It's such a different level to what I'd ever played at. And I think the younger players are getting to experience that now, and we're only going to see the best out of them the more they do and the more games they get.
We will chat about those young players in just a little bit and how important they have been. But what about the early game, Fiona? I mean, for someone like you now, are we still trying to drag you out of that bed, I feel, for the 12 o'clock start?
That's terrible. I yeah, you're right, you're 100% correct. Yeah, I had to get up. No, look, to be honest with you, they would have known going into that. I mean, there was a few changes, but they would be planned. I remember when we play, your meal prep before it is planned to a tea and what you're having, and they change the times and that accordingly. So I think they would have been well looked after going into that game in that kind of sense. And early starts, I mean, look, like club rugby, we played at one across the board at times, so it was an early start, but they would have been, I don't think it would have any effect really on them. And I suppose just maybe on the viewing, it would have been great if it was a later. I think they would have got a higher viewership, but that 1 o'clock start, as a player, you're completely focused, you're ready to go. So I wouldn't imagine it'd have much of an impact from my perspective anyway.
I think it must be very difficult because you're trying to plan your sleep, you're trying to plan when you eat, what you do the morning. Lynn, it must be very difficult as a player to try and plan that, and the nerves are there as well.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting dynamic, because I suppose what we're saying, we presume that these are national players and these are national teams, and it's a national team and therefore it should be able to play at 12 o'clock and all of that stuff. But then you have to think of the reality of, like, maybe it's not, because maybe some players are still learning how to do that or transition, and this is the first time that they've played a 12 o'clock international game. Or, you know, what happened to Italy's flight plans, and, you know, are they all late starters? I'm not making presumptions here, but I think, like, the human factor does come into these things. I'm really, really intrigued to know, and I'd love to be a fly on the wall in the Italians room to analyse their game, because, you know, I think we were all disappointed. I've really enjoyed watching Italian rugby for the last 2 or 3 years. They're very, very smart. And they've got some really, really experienced players. And look, they held England to the wire for the first half in their game, which was absolutely phenomenal. And I'm just interested to know why they couldn't adapt on the pitch and why they showed up in the manner that they did, which was disappointing for them. But, like, I genuinely think, like, again, the more mature that you are, one, you've obviously been in that position before, and two, you're relying on the management team to manage it well so that they know the times that you get up and what you eat and all of that stuff. And, you know, there could be an element where the management team are still adjusting to these conditions as well. So all of those are factors that be things that people don't see.
Fiona, how can we rate Ireland's performance overall, so throughout the campaign, the three games?
Oh, that's a funny one. It was a bit of a roller coaster, wasn't it? Look, as I said at the start, their main focus was to get that, nail that third spot, and you know, going on to that WXV in a couple of years, that's where they want to be. They want to be in the top three. So if you're looking at goal focus, that they have achieved their goal. I suppose, as Lynn said as well, when we saw that first game against Wales, the excitement factors of everyone I talked to went through the roof, and of course, being Irish, we were going to win the World Cup. That was the end of it. You know, after one game, we knew we had it. So look, from that perspective, then people were very disappointed with the France, but none so more than the players and I presume the management themselves, because they were beaten and we saw where we were. But I also think they didn't perform from what I've seen, and I've been watching women's rugby for a long time. They actually didn't perform on the day. No one knows why or how, but there was a massive gulf. But I think, as I said, it didn't help with their performance. And then against Italy, I suppose pressure was on to get that win. It wasn't pretty, but how many games have we played in our whole life where you go out to get that win? I mean, Lynn, in Italy, in Parabaggio, I mean, it was the first time it was televised on RTE, and it was literally like a muckfest. I think I've seen better rugby played out my back, you know what I mean, with my nephews. But it was a win and it was a grand slam. So sometimes those dirty games are all part of it, and their focus was to get that win, and that's what they got. So for me, as a supporter, as a coach, as a watcher, I think they brought us on an emotional roller coaster, but they got to the place where they needed to be at the end.
Lynn, was the most important thing out of the three games maybe the player development and the likes of Bave and Parsons and, you know, the Sevens players getting a chance to shine and just getting them in there?
Yeah, definitely. It was. Every game is important from, any kind of an emerging talent point of view. But just every game is important for these girls at the moment because of the context of COVID, you know, and the world are screaming out for games. And I think Ireland are unfortunate as well. They haven't had a domestic competition. We've got to remember the Allianz League has been functioning in England and in France as well. And so a lot of those players in the England and the French team, well, all of them, to be fair, have been playing domestic rugby. So I think just really, really important for the girls to have played one, get that intensity under their belt from two, learn as much as they can from 40 minutes as possible, and to calibrate. Where are we? Because I think that's all you want to do when you're training for 20 weeks or 20 camps. You just want to put yourself against your competition and say, well, where am I going? And then from that, you can measure what you need to do next.
Fiona, how have you found the structure this year? Just because of COVID and everything, we know is a condensed form, and we have spoken about it over the last few weeks. Is it something you'd like to see, keep and stay? I know you'd obviously want more games, but the visibility of this, the last 3 or 4 weeks, has been absolutely amazing for women in rugby.
Yeah, it was only till now I've kind of reflected on it. And I suppose at the start, people would have been saying, oh, there's less games. Oh, you know, they love watching it coincide with the 20s and the senior men's. And then there's big focus on rugby then because they're watching it. But I think after we're finished, it's over now. And I think the visibility has been through the roof. The media have completely come on board, supported everything that the team were doing, you know, questioned things at times, which is really where they want to be. I mean, the media are never going to tell you you're perfect. They need to be looking at things. And I think that's exactly what the team needed and the tournament needed for an Irish perspective. So I'm still undecided whether the on its own is better, but I think from a media visibility and from people actually in the street telling me, oh my God, I watched the women's rugby, whereas they mightn't have on the weekend because the lads were playing or they might have gone to the 20s. From that perspective, I think there was a lot more viewing it. And for me, that kind of got me excited to know that people were watching it. So yeah, definitely it seemed to have worked. Whether it'll go on in the future, I don't know. I'm sure I'm not going to be anyone who's involved in the decision of that. But I did enjoy it on its own. And there wasn't much rugby on kind of at times, bar the clash for the first game with Leinster. But other than that, it really gave the people of Ireland a chance to sit down and look at women's rugby, but also see the names in the paper afterwards, you know, see them on big headlines, not just shoved in the corner where we are sometimes.
Fiona, I think Lynn would probably agree with you. She's not dead. Fiona, you're lethal. So anyway, we're out chatting about it. But Lynn, I've seen some amazing tweets over the last few weeks and players and saying, my child's outside the back, my little girl's outside, put in to be Emer Constine. I mean, you can't buy that. You can't buy that at all.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's a double-edged sword, you know. So, like, rugby's in a great position that it's free to air. You know, it's a national competition. And if anything, if we're talking about what we're hearing lots of is about men's sports going behind paywalls and stuff. Like, although I don't want men's sports to go behind paywalls, because, you know, it frustrates me that I need 7 million channels to watch men's sport. But the value for women's sport is going to be great. Like, if you have anything free to air, it's just such an instant. Like, I know myself, I'm not a big football fan. I know Fiona Hayes is going to kill me for saying that, but, you know, when the Women's Football World Cup was on last year or 2 years ago, I was hooked. You know what I mean? And I was like robbing the zapper from my husband to say, right, like, Thursday night's my night, I'm watching this football. So it's free to air, you get engaged in it, you watch it, and young girls get it and see, oh yes, I can be that. But young boys also see it playing and say, oh, I like that, you know. So I think that is really important for it. So yes, double-edged sword. I think the more visibility, it does mean you're open to scrutiny for the media and the more people watching, but I think that's only a good thing. I think that's only going to just drive the standards of the game across the board.
You are listening to the Women's Six Nations show on OTB Sports in association with Guinness. They're the proud partner of the Irish rugby team. Fiona, when it comes to Ireland rugby now, where are we when it comes to women's rugby in Ireland? Whereabouts are we?
I suppose realistically we're kind of at crossroads as are a lot of countries. You know, I've read articles on Wales, they're in a similar situation. A lot of people are calling out for a professional game. It's not going to work. You can't just install a professional system and it's going to work. Like, men's rugby and women's rugby are completely separate. They've always been separate. It's a different game. You know, when you watch it, it's rugby's a beautiful game, but when I look at it, I look at it differently, because I know what goes on behind the scenes. I know where the players are coming from. I know how often they train, all that kind of thing. So from me, I think focus needs to shift. You know, we want to qualify for a World Cup. That's obviously our main aim as a country, and that's hopefully going to be in September or after that. So that's the main aim, and hopefully when we can get that, we can really focus on getting the girls maybe back to clubs and trying to bring up the standards in the clubs. So for women's rugby, you know, there we need to, I suppose, the AIL, there's 10 top teams. It's about getting those teams playing at a high level, where we're playing games, the girls are playing games week in, week out at a very, very high level. So when they get up to those camps, when they get to that Irish situation, they're not under as much pressure, because they've felt it. They've felt it in the games that they've played, and they've had their S&C, and their S&C isn't just going from when they're with Ireland. Their S&C is going all year round. And like, little things like that is where it needs to go, and hopefully get to that maybe semi-professional era as well and push on to there. And who knows what will happen after that, but it can't just be a big massive jump for Irish women's rugby. I think we have to look at the structures underneath it. I'm involved, I'm there, so I completely understand that, you know, you can't go, here, give the girls €500 or whatever, you know, people like to think, throw cash at it. It's not that. It's got to be worked in a way that we're getting more girls playing, more athletes, and getting them to stay in the game, but also getting them that high, massive, high standard of game to play week in, week out, so they're ready and they're pushing on and on.
Well, Fiona, are we getting the commitment and the support maybe from the IRFU?
I think so. I think so. I think they're looking at it. They came up with a plan a couple of years ago where they really kind of had an overview of the women's game. I suppose with COVID, they haven't had the chance to implement them at club level. They're trying to get out there. I'd say there's a big push on now with the focus on that. So you know, I mean, David Nusfora said before the competition he doesn't want professionalism just yet, but he wants to increase the size pool, creating a pathway for young women and girls, right? So they are talking about it, and I suppose it's about getting out there and do it. We can't really comment because no one's had normality in, I suppose, the last year and a half. So from that perspective, they've chatted about it beforehand, and hopefully now moving into the new club season or even the Interpro season with Munster, Leinster, Connacht and Ulster, we can really see that they're going to really invest in the clubs and try and get that standard up, making sure there's S&Cs, making sure there's analysis at games. It's all those tiny little things that really push players forward. And then when they eventually go up to camp, as I said, that environment is normal to them because they've experienced it there at their club level.
Lynn, what's required of the players over the next couple of months?
So the next one, like, I'd imagine they're into a little bit of a break now, and then I'd imagine that fairly quickly they'll come back into like a camp situation. Now, whether or not they can travel, I'm sure that everybody's going to be watching that, but they just need to get competitions. It's the same old message, to be honest. Orla Curran is their strength and conditioning coach, and I think she's done a fine job this year. You can see, as Fee said, that, you know, they're definitely looking fitter and leaner and stronger and playing at that intensity for 80 minutes, whereas before you wouldn't have had that, and across the pitch as opposed to just pockets of players. But you'd have to replicate some form of games, whether it's domestically through playing the boys or whether it's some way of trying to manipulate to get some competition from English teams. Or, yeah, so I love, obviously, that's a dot, dot, dot. We don't know what that's going to look like, but it would be just literally as getting as many games as you can in this window. And I'm sure the confirmation of the actual World Cup will help. You know, that would probably be October 2022, and then the qualifying comps in September. Once you get confirmation of all of those things, you can kind of reverse roadmap back.
Yeah, last week I was chatting to Cliona Maloney about the professionalism, because I think this chat comes up every week in the show, and she just said that she knows what she's missing out on. So let's just take a listen to Cliona Maloney from last week.
If you get an answer off a player who says that they don't want to be a professional rugby player, they're lying to you, or they're saying what they have to say. You know what I mean? I'm going to be honest. Everyone wants to be professional. I live with it here myself. Like, my girlfriend is a professional rugby player for England. You know, I live with that difference. I see that difference every day of my life. I don't need to be asked about it every day in the media too. You know, I know what the difference is in terms of just the time. It's just time. It's time, and it's test games, and it's time and testing under pressure and all of that kind of stuff. And that repeatability of execution and performance against the best in the world, which is what anyone needs. And it doesn't matter what guise that comes in, whether it is, you know, an improvement in the AIL or a European Cup structure for women's rugby or professionalism or, you know, grassroots rugby being developed. It's probably all of it. It probably all needs to happen. And until we're realistic really about what does need to change in Ireland, I think people will probably only focus on one or the other. But in reality, we know it's all of it.
I don't think anyone can argue with Cliona Maloney there last week, speaking on the professional side of things. But Fiona, for someone like yourself, you know, you're involved with the coaching side of things. What can the domestic league and the AIL maybe offer towards the development professional side of things?
First of all, I don't think anyone would argue with Cliona Maloney anyway. She's a tough cookie. She's well able. Look, I suppose domestic league, what we need to see is, and the RFU have done this, they've created a 10 team league, right? So we now know that that's there. They need to start, I suppose, we need to start focusing in on that now and getting the best out of that league. I was only talking with someone recently, and, you know, I'm constantly hearing over the years, oh, you know, the Premiership is way better, or the standard over in England is way better. Now, I've played in the AIL my whole life, and as a player, I used to hear that, and I used to get so annoyed. I'd be so annoyed because I'm there going home with black eyes, or, you know, I'm putting my body on the line week in, week out, and I just didn't understand it, because I suppose I was lucky to be on a team that were winning the AIL and doing, performing well. But as a coach, I've kind of stood back now, and I can see there is a difference. There is a difference in how the athletes are coached. There is a difference in S&C. There is a difference in access to gyms. There is a difference. So there is a massive difference there. So for me to improve that, I think we've talked about structures. It's getting those structures in place and enforcing it at club level. If we make a decision as a union to really kind of improve the women's game, I think to be honest, Cliona spoke about it. It's going to be at that grassroots level. You know, it's going to be at that club level. We have the athletes for maybe 90% of the year, realistically. They're at their clubs, you know what I mean? They're down home. There's no one living up in Dublin unless you're from there in an RFU environment. You're down, you're training on your club grounds. You're doing your S&C with your club in local gyms. So it's about really kind of enforcing that, policing that, making sure that it's at a high quality. And I know that's money, and I know people are always saying, oh, you know, that's going to take a lot of money. It mightn't. I mean, we've spoke about the visibility of the women's game now. now and people are enjoying watching it. And if we can get it in, get the money pumped in at that level, I mean, the athletes I've seen around the country that I know would make that step up is very, very high. I've watched them week in, week out, but they might lack in a little bit in S&C, or they might lack ability, technical ability stuff. And that can all easily be fixed if we have the right structures in each club. So for me, it's getting that kind of pathway, like actually outlining it and really going about making sure that club structure is a really high performing environment, I suppose, is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, you can tell you're extremely passionate about it anyway as well, Fiona, and to be fair too. But Lynn, would you see that it's up to the standard that it needs to be? Have we lost Lynn? I think we might have lost Lynn. But Fiona, it has been great to see that. I think we've lost her for just a little bit. But, you know, Ireland did win the Grand Slam back in 2013. There was major hype. She's back, I think. She's talking to us.
Back.
There's major hype. And, you know, there was major hype when Ireland won the Grand Slam in 2013. And the confidence was so high. How can we get back maybe to, you know, being that confident around women's rugby? And how can we get the hype back around them? Do you think that this Women's Six Nations has helped?
Yeah, I think it's definitely helped. I've spoke to people, you know, they were very excited after the Wales game. It's really kind of brought rugby into women's rugby into the forefront of people's thoughts. So, you know, it's just about, I suppose it's about getting we'd review games in the media. We're not talking about all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. Now we're actually looking at what's happening. Oh, did you see Bavin? Did you see Darty Wall knocking over four people in a row? Or did you see Ciara Griffin making a steal at the ruck? So I think we need to kind of get the focus back on the game and what the girls are doing. And that will just bring up the love of the game amongst the people. Because back in 2013, when that happened for us, it was all positivity. We didn't get any negative, really. No one was speaking badly. It was a good time for women's rugby. But I mean, in Parabaggio, as I said, that game wasn't exactly high quality stuff. You know, it was obviously passionate and great to watch as you're winning it. But that's we had so much positivity around us. So I think it's getting that talk away now from what we can do and kind of focusing back actually on rugby, and people start talking about rugby, and that's going to really bring up the visibility as well of the game.
Lynn, from your own personal experience, how can we build the hype now? We need to keep it going. We can't just forget about it now that the Six Nations is over.
Yeah, look, I think the professional structures, I think this is all important, you know, building towards. We have to keep recognising that, you know, the women's game, women's sport in general, it's still a relatively immature sport. And as a result, we have to recognise that we have to guide it through the mature phases towards professionalism. So I think it's a really good dialogue. I'm actually more pro semi-professional structure at the start and then move towards pro. And although technically pro in the women's game is probably still semi-pro in the men's game, but I think what I mean by that is I'm very pro girls and women having like a second focus. I think mentally that's a good thing. I think developing off the pitch as well as on the pitch, I've seen that drive in performance. I think the stories behind the women's game, women in sport in general, I think that they are different nuances to men's sport. And I think you capture that through them being semi-professional or having stories behind. Like if you ask most guys, and I don't mean to be generalist here, but you know, they perform and get to the top through their academy structures, they're identified, they play under 20s. That's quite a same narrative. But the stories behind the women's games, if we listen to the story behind women's games, it allows us to capture the nuances of women's sport and women's rugby. And if we understand that, then we build a structure around that. Yes, lots of it is going to look like a high performance structure and all of the things that Fee is saying. I have to be careful not to call you Rasher because I call her Rasher. But what it will do is it'll have things in it that are a little bit different, you know, things like maternity contracts, because women are women and, you know, they might get pregnant. Those kind of things are really, really important. So I think that's that. Like, I like the idea of a semi-professional structure. I hear Clina loud and clear because I know what she sees on a day in, day out basis. But I'd see really good examples. Like for France, for example, they are semi-pro and they choose to be, and there's value to that. Whereas New Zealand, England have chosen to be pro. So I think we need to look at it and to design it according to what we have and where we want to go, as opposed to just presuming that we just need to go down the men's route, because there's a little bit of apples and pears here. They're very similar, but there's lots of really great differences that I think we understand, and we capture the data for it. We design a massive structure. And I think when we do, then we allow sponsors to recognize that, us as women to identify with that in more acutely and then live it and be able to live it and embrace it. And I think that's a really exciting space for me.
Brilliant. That's great. And I think the real question from all of this is, why do you call Fiona Hayes Rasher?
Are we gonna... I just think as a big thick dub going down to Limerick, you know, I wasn't comfortable calling people their actual names. I was like, I need to think of a seems like the kind of person I could give a nickname to.
I think you called me a pig, was it, Lena?
Oh God! Anyway,
never.
No name calling here. But Fiona, I suppose we have been mentioning it there. But what about the argument that Ireland have a much smaller pool of players than the likes of England and stuff? You know, these players haven't had younger clubs. They're like, often I've spoken to players and they've only started playing rugby in college, which is quite late. So there's nowhere for them to start. So that's why we don't have the pool of players.
Yeah, and I think all the provinces have really worked really hard in the last couple of years. I know down in Munster anyway, they've been working hard to get like that under 14, 16, 17 and 18 levels going. So that's a work in progress. I mean, I got my first Irish cap at 30. So I practically nearly had a walking stick going on the pitch, but I literally, that's the way it was, but I've seen it now. I'm coaching in UCC and I've coached there for about 8 years. And I suppose at the start, I would always get players starting out at rugby, but now it's completely changed. The majority of players already have a club. They go home and play with their club at the weekend, and they come with it with skills attached that they've already been working on. So I do believe it has been changing over the last few years. But yes, like those structures need to be in place. If you want, you need to be getting the players in at 14. You know, I think Briggs said on RT at the match that maybe 14 out of the 15 French players have been playing since maybe they were 8 or 9. That's not the case in Ireland. It's definitely... We have the old GAA to contend with. You love it, Valerie. Your true love, the GAA. But like, you have players that, you know, grow up in places where I suppose GAA is number one, and they'll give that a go, and then they'll play that for a few years and maybe then decide to take up rugby. So I think we really need to work hard as well to making rugby appealing and making more people want to play it from that earlier age as well. And I suppose the thing about girls, boys as well, but at that age, you play nearly 4 or 5 sports and you don't focus really till later in life. So the big thing for me would be that's fine, let people play the sports, but it's getting that 18 to 20 kind of age gap and making sure that they're sticking with the rugby, they're not giving it up, that they actually had a passion for it before and that it kind of continues through love of the game. I suppose that's a big thing for me, that 18 to 20 bracket.
Yeah, I blame my father for not introducing a rugby ball to me when I was younger. It was a hurley that was shoved into my hand, so I'm going to blame Dad for that one. But it has been great to see the women's game and highlighted so much over the last couple of weeks. But Lynn, for you personally, what are your hopes maybe for the future of the game here for women in Ireland?
Look, I've definitely got positive hopes. The potential is there in buckets. It's just about choices that I've mentioned before. Like, you know, the path is set. In the past, we didn't have a global competition, or we didn't have visibility or commercial sponsors connecting with the game, but we do now globally. And I think that's really exciting. So the path is there. And I'd hope that Ireland would want to step up and be part of that, and not only be part of it, but be competitive in that top six. So the global competition obviously starts in 2023. We've got a World Cup next year. You want to see Ireland being front and center of all of that, because, you know, the effect of it from a visibility point of view is going to be mega. And just to Fee Hayes's point there about, you know, Ireland has a massive team sport culture, and rugby has got the visibility for all of the reasons that we described. So it really has the ability, just to has the potential to open a tap, and just so many girls flow through to it. And just to the point there about athlete transfer, like, I think it's a reality of women's sport at the moment, in line with the fact that it's at a less mature age, that we have got we will have more athletes transfer into sports, and that's an opportunity. However, what I would say from rugby point of view is that if you haven't got structures in the game, then you're reliant on athletes to transfer into your game as adult sports. And so you'd want to be able to see that changes. You'd definitely open the door for any women in Ireland, because it's such a kind of team sport country, to transition over to rugby. But you definitely want to see the structures there to backfill it, so we got more young girls that are being inspired by what to see on the TV to go to their local and to walk in there, to have the toilets are open for the women's game. You have a picture of women on the wall, and you have got female coaches that are coaching, and all that says is that women are welcome in this sport.
Yeah, I mean, it's only going in one direction, and hopefully it'll stay going up. Fiona, before we finish up quickly, maybe your hopes and dreams for the future of rugby here in Ireland for the women.
Yeah, exactly. Similar to Lena. I just, first of all, obviously, I hope that we're all going to be watching an Irish team in the World Cup next summer. I think that would be great for the country. I think there'd be brilliant buzz around that, you know, because at the end of the day, Irish people in general, we love supporting our team when they're going places, and, you know, and to see an Irish team in a World Cup, I'm sure that will bring more visibility again to the game. So I suppose my thing is to get to that World Cup, but perform at a good level, have their goals set out, and be able to perform at that level, and then hopefully things will kick on at club level, and we'll constantly be firing athletes. Like, I'll be down Limerick, Cork, wherever I am, firing athletes up to Irish camps, and they're ready to go. They're not kind of technically able or they're a bit nervous. They're ready to get in there, and that's the big thing for me, is that camp environment. If that's thriving and if that's competitive, that's what's going to get the best out of all these girls up there as well.
Well, you've been absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for joining us, Fiona Hayes and Lynn Caldwell, for today. You have been listening to the Women's Six Nations show on OTB Sports in association with Guinness. They are the proud partners of the Irish rugby team. That is it from us. Thank you so much for joining us over the last 4 weeks when we celebrated all things Women's Six Nations for 2021. If you have missed out anything, you can check it out on the podcast section, or you can download the OTB Sports app. And thank you all so much for watching.
The Women's Six Nations Show on OTB Sports.
In association with Guinness, drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.